The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Tēnā koutou katoa, no mai, haere mai ki Dietary Requirements, ko Simon Day Takawingawa, and I am your host today. Each month we get together to talk about the social, environmental, political consequences of food in Aotearoa, and we also talk to the buzziest people in the scene about what they are up to. I am joined today by Sophie Gilmore. Kia ora, Sophie.
Kia ora, Simon.
She's the owner of Fatima's and Hospitality Boss. We have, just so I don't forget, Tina on production today. Shout out to Tina.
Yeah, Tina.
And very exciting news, we have a brand new sponsor to introduce. For the next 2 months, we are going to be serving up Dietary Requirements in partnership with Visa Wellington on a Plate.
Boop, boop.
The festival runs in August. We are part of the festival, August 15. You can see us live at the Parrot Dog Brewery in Lyell Bay. We'll be talking about all the things that make hospitality in Wellington awesome, the way that COVID-19 has affected the industry, and have some really amazing guests yet to be announced, yet to be contacted, joining us as well. Wellington on a Plate is just such an incredible food festival. I am a genuine huge fan. You could get me to say this without sponsoring my podcast, but seeing as they have, I will say it with extra vigor. Go to Wellington during August. The program is out right now, and there are some incredible events. It's all about taking you on a global trip through food, because you can't really go on one anyway.
Nice. They do such a good job, don't they? I'm going to do an annual pilgrimage.
I remember talking to Mimi, Sophie's sister, about it when I was really lucky to go to an event where I was cooked for by Nancy Silverton. And she says, why can't we do this in Auckland? Why don't, like, we have food festivals, but it's just not the same, I think.
Yeah, this
global
is
ambition.
Cozier.
There's a real ambition to it.
This is kind of cozier, and it's also more viral. Hey, like, everybody knows about it. Everyone's talking about it. The restaurants are all booked out. Like, it's absolutely wild, like, when you're an operator down there for that period. And it was actually born out of the fact that August is the quiet month for restaurants, so they wanted to give everyone a bit of a boost, and now it's, like, equally as busy as Christmas.
And speaking of the effects of COVID-19 on the hospitality industry, we've got a really special guest joining us in the studio today, Chan Sarawat. Thank you for being with us, because today the Restaurant Association, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Launched a campaign called Reset. And this is about responding to the skills and labour shortage created by the pandemic and the border closure.
Yeah.
And can we call it an inability of the government to respond quickly enough to the needs of the hospitality industry to survive in the face of that?
I think it's just coming a little bit too late. Like last night they announced, this morning they announced, Chris Farfoy announced that they would extend the working holiday visas of people who are still here. A little bit too late when their visas are expiring next month.
Mm.
We lost about 6 or 7 working holiday visa holders because they had no certainty, especially given this time. If you want to return back to Spain or Italy, you got to book your ticket well in advance, because it's not like the planes fly every day.
Mm.
So we've already lost these people.
So your reputation precedes you for most people, but just in case listeners don't know, Chand runs two now or still three?
Still three until September.
Three of Auckland's most glorious restaurants, Siddat, Three Lamps in Ponsonby, Cassia, this an incredible sort of collaboration of wonderful cooking, but Indian street food, bringing it together in the same space. And in the top of Mount Eden Road, or is it the end of Simon Street?
End of Simon Street,
the French Cafe by Sid.
Yeah.
And what I found really interesting is that there is, you know, when I think of the role of people on working visas to New Zealand in the hospitality industry, I'm thinking of kitchen hands and people cooking at restaurants that don't look quite like yours.
Mm.
But I didn't realize how important it is to the entire industry across the whole spectrum of the sector these skilled migrants are.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about a country like France, right, where hospitality is actually a career, unlike New Zealand where we see it like a in-between uni transition phase. We have workers who come on working holiday visas from France. We have workers who come from Italy. And they fill the gaps when needed as well. So it's not just your kitchen hands. We even have senior waiters, sommeliers. Mm-hmm. We have chefs.
Everyone.
Sid actually had a chef who came in about a month back who had a seasonal worker's visa, which means he was only allowed to pick fruit. And at the time when we called immigration, they said, you can't hire him as a chef, even though he's a qualified chef. Yeah. So we had to turn him away. But this morning we find out, well, we can hire him. Now we have to try and find him.
Right. Yeah, track him down.
Track him down if he's not run back to the USA.
Yeah.
So we're not just thinking of, you know, the low-skilled jobs in hospital, but every skill, every level.
Because Chand wrote a letter to the government for the spin-off. You can find it on thespinoff.co.nz/food. And it was the headline was, "You're cutting off our lifeblood." And it's really interesting to think of the role of immigrants as that important to the sector. Because you arrived in New Zealand from India?
From India, yeah.
And was hospitality one of the first places you worked? Or?
No, it was the first thing I dated in New Zealand. No, I'm a trained secondary school teacher and I gave that up because actually I found that my husband would pay me better and value my hours better. So I got a little bit sick of I get a bit sick about everybody saying hospital is underpaid, because as a teacher, it really aggravates me that I worked so many hours and I was on a salary and was expected to do that. Every kid after school programs, everything. You're supposed to give your lunch break up, extracurricular activities, marking, never ending. So I could never find the work-life balance. Even if you were sick as a teacher, you got to write a relief for the other teacher to do your work.
That's my husband today.
At least in hospital, you can call in sick. And
yeah.
We don't say someone else teach someone else to make your coffee.
Yeah. We need a few more positions, right? Open the borders, pay the teachers, pay the nurses.
Yes, absolutely. It's a really, really precarious moment that we're in at the moment. Absolutely everyone is, the operators are getting really exhausted. It's kind of like a hangover from COVID. We feel grateful, of course, in the global situation with where we're at. But now we're dealing with the tail end of a lot of young staff and their mental well-being is not that good. So it's really exhausting managing staff at the moment, particularly if they're not coping, which means that often they're not at work, which means that you're constantly finding gaps.
And I think it's burnout even for employers, because last year you just kind of barely managed to get through it all. For me, I reached my birthday and I got sedated by the doctors. For 3 days, I have no memory of my 35th birthday because I was sedated.
What part of the year was that?
December the 4th. Yeah, I just had enough by then. So I had to, which is why we decided it's time to sell Siddat. Because you can't do this. You can't light the fire at both ends and keep going.
Yeah.
And it's the same for, you know, everybody in the industry. So I think we need to think and weigh up the fact that we need to balance this immigration issue. But also, what about mental health for the entire industry?
So what do you think the solution looks like?
I think what we need is the government to actually sit down with hospital and talk to us, because we have solutions that we're willing to put forth, but no one's asked us. there's a lot of solutions. Like one of the solutions I came up with is what's happened in Australia. They've increased the hours for student visa workers so that they can work up to 40 hours instead of 20.
Mm.
And that would go a little ways to alleviate the problem. Same thing. I mean, it's great. Today was a great first step. Don't get me wrong with extending those working holiday visas, but it could have come a bit.
Explain what happened. What was the Minister Fafoy's announcement today exactly?
So today they extended all existing working holiday visas until December by another 6 months. So anything that was expiring between July and December is now extended for another 6 months. Also, anybody who's on the seasonal worker visa, which is only supposed to be for fruit picking, they've now allowed them to go into any industry that they want, which is also amazing. So it will go a little ways to fill a very large gap.
But that relies on people being here already.
Yeah.
And being equipped to work in...
In the jobs we need.
So it's a partial solution.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, we've
lost...
It's
a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it's a drop in the bucket. But we should appreciate whatever we get, so we will totally be grateful.
There's like if you walk along Ponsonby Road, for example, as a high touch food zone, every single cafe has got a sign up in the window saying we're recruiting workers.
Or the other sign is we're now closed on Monday and Tuesdays because we can't get
enough staff. And I think that that's the other thing is the employer burnout thing. Like we're potentially expected to suck it up and take responsibility, which we do and we keep going, but there's actually not enough hours in the day to both be recruiting staff. So at the moment I'm trying to recruit staff and it probably takes 2 or 3 hours of the day to make contact with them. Then you invite them in for an interview. There's a lot of people that are not showing up for interviews. If the interview goes well, you might invite them for a trial. A lot of them then don't show up for the trial. But the weirdest one is sometimes people trial and you give them, you offer them a job and then they don't get back to you. Mm. So it's like there's this whole attitude, I guess, of people knowing that we need them more than they need us. And so it's creating other problems.
I think Auckland Hospital has grown since COVID as well, because there were all these projects planned for last year that still went ahead. So many new restaurants opened and our pool of workers actually got lower and lower. Yeah. And now this is not a New Zealand only problem, if you think about it. Just this week, we're going to lose a senior waiter from Cassia to Australia. We've lost a head chef 2 weeks back to Australia. So Kiwis are not going to stay put as well, because hospital is something that you can take your skills and go somewhere else and you will learn. And why not? Why not go work for another great chef in Australia or in Melbourne? Because it's only going to grow your CV, your skills. So you can't hold people back.
Mm.
But it's a problem that needs to be seriously looked at.
The part that I liked about your letter was, you know, how they're basically calling hospitality unskilled. And so it therefore doesn't qualify for immigration to approve these visas. And I actually do think that's offensive. Like, these are the people that we're relying on making your coffee but also making your day in the morning. And hospitality is a business like any other business, and the industry is hospitality, which I think involves a whole lot more EQ than a lot of skills-based industries. Mm. And so I think to say that it's a bunch of low-skilled people on one hand is incorrect, because we're also having to train novice workers. And then because we have so many novice workers, we're now paying them more than $20 an hour, which means that they're not necessarily showing up bringing that much value to our businesses. So we're spending a whole bunch of time to train them to basically be as valuable as we need them to be to make the numbers work to try and turn a profit.
Like, it's a juggling act.
Yeah, the
constant
whole thing.
Constant juggling act.
I think that was one of the most interesting points you raised in the letter, Chand, from the Restaurant Association's survey of the industry, is that 92% of the hospitality business has huge difficulty in recruiting senior staff.
Yeah.
this isn't the people that I assumed were migrant labour. And I think it's almost racist, my assumption, my initial assumption that I talked about. But these are the sommeliers, the sous chefs, the people that define your restaurant's ability to be able to produce something amazing.
And I mean, for me, what was really insulting was in Stuart Nash's speech was that, oh, you know, you need to start not relying on migrant workers, but and start automating. How do I automate a head chef, a sommelier in a fine dining restaurant? I can't create an app for you to order your wine.
Mm. I saw a robot cocktail waiter on a cruise ship.
Mm. Well, there was quite a lot of
Stuart noise. Nash is pretty offensive anyway, like period.
There was quite a lot of noise last week about Elon Musk filing a bunch of patents for takeaway restaurants. So he's doing like, I think the presumption is that there's going to be like a petrol station that's self-serve that you roll up to in your Tesla and it also spits out food for you.
I'm sorry, just it for me, the definition of hospitality is
hosting people.
Is hosting people.
Yeah.
You why do you rate service in a TripAdvisor, review? Yeah.
I know. I think it's taking the hospitality out of hospitality, okay. But it's interesting because more and more people want that kind of thing, don't they?
And I think the other thing that annoys me is this expectation that we can just jump out and find someone on the road, pick them up, and teach them.
Yeah.
And they will be able to create
anyone
magic in the kitchen.
Anyone can do it.
Anyone can do it. This is not skilled because, why don't you just go hire someone off, get someone off the dole? Yes, there are certain jobs that are not super skilled, like dishwashing, maybe running some food, maybe but the definition of a higher-end restaurant or anywhere like cashier or anything smart dining, you can't just grab someone off the road. Hey, I can't, after so many years in hospo, go and confidently match anyone's wine. I go, sommelier, please.
Well, I mean, I was rolling Peters at Fatima's today at lunchtime and I'm definitely not the best we've got. I think I could be a lot better, but,
Do you hand make your pita pockets?
No. The breads get folded and then rolled before they get toasted. And I didn't get the tuck at the end quite right today. So one of them opened up and the fillings fell out the bottom.
But I think it's such an important point to make. Because, Sophie's been working in hospitality since she was like 13 years old. Mm-hmm. It's a skill set that you start off as a food runner or washing the dishes. But the skills you pick up on that path are so important to your ability to be a really great server or manager or
what about just listener or individual or friend or like there are so many things that hospitality teaches you that you will not learn in another industry. And that's what I try and say to our young staff. It's particularly the young Kiwi staff. You know, when people say, can't you just hire New Zealanders? You're like, well, I would if they would do the job. But a lot of them just do not value what they're doing. Like they're so focused on it being transient that they miss the opportunity that's right in front of them, which is to learn how to work under pressure, learn how to work in a team, learn how to talk to people that you don't know. Mm. Like it's a bunch of things that are going to be really helpful for whatever you do next. But I think they put it in like an industry category and think that's not going to be helpful because I'm going to be in marketing one day or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think there needs to be a culture shift for the whole country from everyone involved. And that's what I'd like the government to actually consider, is sit down with us and get every stakeholder involved, because it's not just about the owner-operators. I think it's a wider conversation.
Totally.
We need to talk about customers. Customers need, if you want your free range, you want us to pay someone $29 an hour, guess what? That means that things are going
to
cost
more.
Yeah. Are you okay paying $12 for your coffee in the morning?
Yeah.
Are you okay to pay $55 for a main? Because, hell yeah, I'm happy to pay everybody heaps of money if I can charge people heaps of money.
Yeah.
It's at the end of the day, we're in it for a business, right?
And the margins
are really low. We've got high rents. Something's got to give, whether the government looks at taking GST off fruit and veg, because that will bring down some of the costs on us.
Mm-hmm.
And it would also help the lower socioeconomic.
I'm in favor of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are lots of ways to creatively solve this problem as a country. But it's another thing that what's happening right now is that we feel totally scapegoated. And so do the migrants. We've got chefs in our restaurant. We've got a manager in our restaurant who worked with us for 6 or 7 years. We can't be terrible employers if they're still there. And they're working towards getting their residence. But right now, they can't even apply for that residence because the EOI category is closed.
I've got someone who's had their application for residency in New Zealand before immigration for 2 years.
Wow.
So they were able to apply 2 years ago, yeah. And he's got a young baby and a wife, and he's just waiting to find out whether it's approved or not.
It's an interesting, eh? The hospitality sector is this really fascinating microcosm of some of the broader problems of the country, like the cost of food and veg, the value that we place on staff.
Mm.
The immigration issue, it's really fascinating in a way, well, and also really hard because the industry was also at the very pointy end of the effects of COVID-19.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, anyone who thought people were getting rich from running a cafe or a restaurant before COVID-19 were wrong. It's, you know, and it's so much harder. Now, are we starting to see closures?
We've had a lot of closures. Yeah. I mean, some big names have gone, like O'Connell Street Bistro is gone. And I think if we don't do something, people are actually going to lose out. And this is what scares me, right? It's fine for someone like Sid and me to sell our restaurant to our head chef and give him an opportunity to take over Siddharth.
We'll come back to that.
Great. But what happens if a restaurant actually closes? Who loses out? Suppliers. They lose a customer.
Yeah, the whole supply chain.
Farmers. Producers, they lose. Government loses GST. All these people who are employed by us lose jobs. So
the
what
landlord
is landlord?
Well,
well, that's what I was saying to one of our young employees the other day. She was kind of latching on to the idea of minimum wage, and she's like, well, "I'm on minimum wage," because she hadn't completed her training. She was on like 50 cents above minimum wage, but was ready to step up. But I said, "You have to do your training. You have to be signed off in order to get your pay rise." And I think that we're now at a point where $20 an hour is not a terrible wage. You know, we should be proud of that, and New Zealand should be proud of that, and I'm in favour of that across the board. But it's really affects industries like ours that employ completely novice workers, because when we hire someone that's never worked before, we have to pay one of our other staff to go off the floor to train that person. So they effectively cost us twice the money until we train them up and get them right. I'm sure every industry has their training challenges, but I think that hospitality is no one's at $20 an hour being paid badly. If you work hard and you work 40 hours a week, which I thought was full-time, but now people are applying for jobs saying that 30 hours is full-time, then I think that, you know, that we are moving in the right direction, but it's just it's a really tight spot at the moment.
Plus tips. I always say, hey, I never got tips as a teacher for doing a good job with Johnny.
Yeah.
But I guess it's different at every level, but at our restaurants, they clear really good tips.
Do they? Yeah. No tips at Fatima's.
Yeah, I mean, it's different for fast food.
At Chibo, we used to get envelopes with just as much as our wage as in tips.
Mm. I think that was more representative of where our wages were at that time in the early 2000s.
Yeah, but I think it still continues in a lot of restaurants. A lot of people do tip. I know the mentality is not to tip in general, but I think a lot of customers, I had one customer ask me after the spin-off article is, you know, what about tips if we tip more and you guys have to pay lesser? I said, it doesn't quite work like that. Because it has to be across the board. We're not America and we don't want to go into becoming America.
No.
I don't agree with American
And they're hospitals. Reversing so, that anyway.
Yeah,
but do tip more. If you had a really good time, listeners, if you felt like you were, you know, bonded with your waiter, that they changed your experience, like endorse that service. I worked at a restaurant in Melbourne where half of our tips were confiscated and distributed to the other staff until we passed the test on the food, wine, architecture of the restaurant. We had to know who made the curtains.
Oh, so when once you pass that, you're eligible to get your full tips.
Hard out. We just go we have a split between the kitchen and the front because both Sid and I feel like one cannot do without the other.
Yeah.
But then it's equitable.
Best service in the world. If you have shit food, you're not getting it.
Exactly. Tip, right? You don't want this chef to spit in your food. You carry it out with a smile.
I tip, even, it's interesting, I tip, I think, because of feeling the way about the industry that I do, but I tip regardless.
So what I do now is I always tip, and it's about 5% as long as it wasn't a disaster, an acknowledgement of these people working hard, like trying to learn. And if it's really good, I give cash directly to my...
Oh, my God, that's such boomer behavior.
No, because...
Because it's to make sure that person gets it.
Like, yeah, I want that dude or dudette to put that money straight in their pocket.
Yeah, but they can't. They can't. If you did that to me, I would just go and put it in the stuff.
You do another boomer thing, can you wink at them?
But I think, you know, like you're right, Simon.
You can ask as a consumer,
where do your tips, how do they get split? Yeah. I'm happy to answer that question if I'm on the floor and a customer says, hey, I want a tip. How do you divide your tips? And I will tell you honestly how it is.
Yeah, and sometimes I remember people would say, I want this to go to this waitress. And people are like, fine, it's an exception, whatever. Like that person's just really obsessed with giving that person a tip. You're like, go, great. But apparently, yeah, there are good tips in some restaurants in Auckland. And I've noticed more and more people are adding a credit card fee to their bill, and more people are adding the option to tip on the FPOS machine.
Yeah, we have an option to tip. Maybe that's why we get a few more tips, but we don't do the credit card surcharge yet because I didn't want to piss anyone off.
Yeah.
I don't like banks in general, so I say to banks, hey, you got to reduce those fees for us because that would be, I think there's something coming up, right, that they're going to standardize the fees across the board. But
it's getting ridiculous because now every time you tap your card,
if
you use PayWave, it gets treated as though it's a credit card with the bank, and then we get charged a fee as though it's a credit card.
For me, it's just a cost of business. So
it's a lot of money every month.
Yeah.
And it doesn't cost the banks any money.
I know. It's not fair.
It's wild out there, isn't it?
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
But let's talk about you selling your new restaurant, your old restaurant, new owner, which is your head chef. Mm. That's so exciting.
Was it hard? Was it emotional?
It's mixed feelings, but it does feel right at the core of it. We were, like I said, both Sid and I were exhausted. We're running ragged. We can't do this to ourselves. And we wanted to actually inspire the rest of our staff that this is possible. Leslie's worked with us for so long, and he's proven himself. And it is the next step for him. He's never been an owner, but he can. There's an X factor about certain people. You can be a great chef, but can you be a great leader? Because you got to keep everyone motivated and engaged and still push that food out to a high level and a high standard. And we just felt that he was right. And he wanted to always do something on his own. We could lose him to another country or another restaurant or motivate him to stay and be part of the family and do something for his future. So I think it's great that him and Lucia will become business owners in September, and he's having to learn everything. It's kind of funny for me because I put him through the motions. I'm like, oh yeah, now you got to pay this, and you got to pay that license, and you got to get this.
Yeah.
And this is how you do a contract. He's like, oh my god.
Yeah. Honestly,
really excited for his like first HR dispute.
Well, I used to reject that my legal background did anything helpful for me in hospitality. But honestly, I've spent half my time filling out immigration applications or fighting immigration on applications and also negotiating leases and
I think hospital teachers use so many skills as well. Yeah. And, I mean, I came as a teacher, but also I've got a degree in psychology and I use it with all the staff. Every time there's a staffing issue, it's like, come here, sit down, let's resolve this. The psychiatrist is in, the psychologist is in the building for another hour.
Yeah. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah. So you can use so many skills in hospital, and hospital teachers use so many skills as well. So it's great for a career.
Yeah.
So what does the transition plan look like?
So Sid and I will own Siddharth until the 4th of September, which will be our last service. And then Leslie will, on Monday, everything changes hands and it's his restaurant. I mean, we're going to remain silent partners because we're funding him through the process. So he's got a few years to pay us back at his own time. But every decision from then on is his.
Cool.
We're there to be sounding boards and mentors. So if you have an issue, you can pick up the phone and ask me a question. But I'm looking forward to not doing immigration applications for Siddharth.
Oh, yeah.
It's so making me feel quite emotional, like the investment in your people and your willingness to both, like, set them free in this amazing space but help them on that path. Mm. It's really, really cool. You must be really proud.
Yeah, and it was for us, it was a way of paying it forward as well, because someone took a chance on us. We had an angel investor when we were, I would say, young, 14 years ago when we got Siddharth. I mean, I was supposed to stay as a teacher and keep my job plus support Sid. And someone took a second mortgage on our house and bound us by all these clauses, but gave us the money to go follow our dream. So Sid could go and do his dream. So I think it's important to pay it forward. We'll feel a lot easier once we've paid the debt to the universe.
Yeah.
And I know you can't speak for Leslie, but do you know anything about the way the food might change or the vibe or?
I think Leslie's, from what I know him, he's very cool and chilled out. And he's got this Fijian vibe always around him. He's got this calm persona. So he's going to bring a bit of Fiji and Indian flavors in. I've never come across a Fiji and Indian restaurant.
Cool.
So Siddharth, being progressive Indian, he's very cool with that style. He's actually been an R&D chef for us. We're at Siddharth. So he's designed the menus and he's used to it. He's already there at the moment because we lost our Siddharth chef to Australia, the head chef. So Leslie.
The bubble has had really unexpected consequences.
Yeah.
Right?
So Leslie, why don't you just take the reins and get used to it? So he's already working on the menu.
Where was he before that?
He was the head chef at the French Cafe.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So it means Sid at the French Cafe doesn't have a head chef at the moment and Sid's plugging the hole there, but that's fine. Leslie's already getting onto the ropes and learning, but I think it'll be a little bit of a Fijian Indian twist to Siddharth's cuisine. And I think that'll be really interesting. I can't wait to go back and try it.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Really, really exciting. Well, Jacinda Ardern, if you're listening, you need to sit down with the hospitality sector and, you know, listen to the things that are affecting them, because it is a big deal affecting a lot of people's lives. You need to pay the teachers, pay the nurses.
And while we're on that note.
Well, I've got you. And you also need to give us 5 stars and subscribe. I wonder if, like, the Prime Minister's 5 stars come with extra bonus points.
Rate, review, sign it, Jacinda Ardern. Yeah. That'd be great.
And you also need to, Jacinda Ardern, go to Wellington on a Plate during the entire month of August. It's an incredible food festival. The program is out now. The events are delicious. They're progressive and they're really fun and exciting. So support the hospitality sector in all the ways that you can. And thank you for joining us, Chan.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming. So nice to have you here.
Ka kite.
Bye.
Bye.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.